Hey, you spooky good humans. Welcome back to Murdered and Missing. I'm your host, Nicole, and today's story is out of Shelby, North Carolina. Today, we're going to be diving into the disappearance of Aisha Degree. Aisha disappeared mysteriously from the side of the highway roughly around 4 a.m. on Valentine's Day in 2000. She was just 9 years old. What caused Aisha to get out of bed that night, pack a bag, and walk away into a rainy night has left her families and investigators baffled for almost 23 years. This is Aisha's story. Aisha was born on August 5th, 1990 in Shelby, North Carolina. She was born to parents Harold and Aquila Degree, who were married on Valentine's Day in 1988. Aisha had an older brother, O'Brien, who was born the year before Aisha in 1989, and the Degree family raised both of their kiddos in their home on Oakcrest Drive in a rural area of north of Shelby. Now, Shelby is on the western side of Charlotte, North Carolina, and both Aisha and O'Brien were what they call latchkey kids. So, in case some of my listeners are not familiar with the term latchkey kid, it's usually when a kiddo gets home before one or both of their parents or their guardians and they let themselves in the house. I was a latchkey kid when I was Aisha's age, and it was the early 2000s, so this was totally normal for a 9-year-old to, just let themselves in and call it a day. I don't know, the early 2000s and 90s was a wild time to be alive. Now, on February 12th, 2000, fourth grader Aisha and her basketball team had lost their first basketball match of the season. Now, Aisha was actually point guard for her team, and from many sources that I read, she was the star of the team and she had so much potential ahead of her. However, according to the FBI and the information that they have put out in regards to Aisha's case, Aisha had actually fouled out of that game, and that ultimately led to her team losing the game by just 1 point. And her parents would go on to say that Aisha was so upset over this, and she was crying, and, you know, she's 9, it's completely understandable, she's having trouble processing those emotions, you know, and her parents and her teammates, they were all rallying around her, you know, trying to calm her and let her know that, you know, it's okay, losing happens. And, you know, but her parents, they go on to say that she was just so competitive and this loss was just devastating to her at this time. And it bothered her immensely. However, like many 9-year-olds, she was over it in just a few minutes. I have a 9-year-old and I can attest that she's fine in like 5 minutes. She just gotta cry it out, you know, like it gives a whole new meaning to the term cry it out. So some sources actually state that a few minutes later, she is seen by her coach and her mom joking and smiling with some of her friends while they watched O'Brien play his game, which happened to be going on after Aisha's game. Now we're going to fast forward to February 13th of 2000, and it's a Sunday, and like any other Sunday, the Degree family is going to go to church at the Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church. Sorry, I said that really slow. It was like a tongue twister for me. Tried to say this like 5 times and I kept stumbling over my words. Now, after church, they went to Aisha's aunt's house for lunch, which is what they did from everything that I've read every single Sunday. So they go to her house for lunch, they eat lunch, they spend time, you know, congregating with family and stuff like that, and then they go home. Aisha's mom said that she had recalled Aisha was no longer upset about the loss the day before, and Aisha's grandmother even said that she had recalled Aisha being happy about getting candy that day in honor of Valentine's Day. So From what it seems, she had gotten candy from, you know, possibly church or other family members because Valentine's Day and Aquila and Harold's anniversary is the next day and she was due to go to school that day. So around 6:30 that night, Aisha's going to tell her parents that she's tired from the night before because she was at a sleepover. Any little girl, possibly little boy who's ever been to a sleepover knows you don't get much sleep. I know they're called sleepovers. You generally don't get much sleep. So she told her parents, hey, I'm going to go take a nap. So she goes, she takes the nap, and about an hour to an hour and a half outside, later, there is a storm raging outside of the family home. So this wakes Aisha up, and sources vary on what time, but it seems like Aisha woke up around 8:30 and headed into the den from 8:30 to 9 to watch TV with her family before she returned to bed at 9 p.m. And after returning to her room, the power to the house actually goes out because a car crashed into a power pole near the entrance of the family's subdivision. So it's been reported that the power was out till roughly about 12:30 a.m. So at this point, Aisha and O'Brien are asleep. So at 12:30, Harold is going to peek in on Aisha and O'Brien. Now, Aisha and O'Brien actually shared a bedroom. So when he peeks in on the kiddos, he does it at once because they are in the same room. And he said that both kids were both in there, they were both asleep, and nothing seemed amiss. Now, Harold's going to go back out to the living room. It seems like he's going to watch TV, he's going to do something, and about 2 hours later at 2:30, Harold's going to go back and check on his children before he finally goes to bed that night. And at this time, both children are still asleep and they are both still in their beds. From everything that I've seen, everything that's been reported, everything that I've read, 2:30 a.m., Aisha was still there. Now, sometime between 2:30, when Harold last saw her, and 3:30 a.m., when O'Brien would actually hear her bed squeak, Aisha is going to leave the house. So he's going to hear this bed squeak, and he does not bother to like open his eyes because he just thinks she's tossing and turning in bed, she's readjusting, or possibly going to the bathroom. So O'Brien would later say that he didn't actually lay eyes on Aisha at that point. He just heard her bed move. So we know that at some point Aisha gets up and she is going to pack her black backpack. She's going to throw on a pair of acid wash jeans or possibly some white jeans. And she's going to put those jeans on under her white nightshirt that actually had a teddy bear on the front of it. And then she's going to put on a pair of her white Nike sneakers. And before leaving the house, Aisha is actually going to grab her Tweety Bird purse. And inside Aisha's backpack, what she puts in there is a pair of blue jeans with a red stripe on them, a pair of black sneakers, a long-sleeved white t-shirt with purple lettering. It is unclear what that lettering spelled out. A red vest with black trim and a long-sleeved black and white shirt. So sometime around 3:30 a.m., Aisha wakes up, gets out of bed, packs a backpack, grabs her Tweety Bird purse, and leaves the house. I just want to reiterate that because she's 9 and a lot of theories, which I will get into later, are going to kind of harp on the fact that she packed her backpack full of clothes. Okay. I don't want to do like any spoilers and kind of tell you guys too much now, because when I get into theories, you're going to be like, hold up, wait a minute. So let's keep going. So Jeff Roop is actually a truck driver for the Sun Drop Bottling Company. And he was actually driving his truck along Highway 18 around 3:45 in the morning. So this is 15 minutes after Aisha had allegedly left her house. So Harold checks on her at 2:30. O'Brien hears the bed squeak roughly around 3:30 a.m. And then 15 minutes later, Jeff is going to spot a young girl who everybody believes is Aisha. Her parents believe it. Authorities believe it. You know, web sleuths seem to be believing that this little girl is Aisha. And this is why. They see her with a black backpack walking south along Highway 18 north of Shelby. He's going to tell authorities that he found the sighting odd and he's going to turn around. I mean, I don't blame him because he's concerned about seeing a young girl walking along the highway at night. I'm concerned that there's possibly a young girl walking along the highway at night. However, when Jeff turns around, Aisha, or this little girl, everybody believes it's Aisha, so I'm going to assume that it is Aisha. So Aisha's going to look up at him, she's never going to look up at him when he tried to talk to her. And he's going to later tell the FBI when he speaks to them that she was walking pretty fast. Said that she was walking like she knew where she was going. So Jeff didn't push. He didn't get out of the car. He said that he turned his truck around to head back in the direction of his original travel. And he's going to again pass Aisha. And at this point, he's going to actually notice that she is going to veer off of the highway and into the woods that are alongside of Highway 18. Now, I want y'all to keep these woods and Highway 18 in the back of your minds because this is going to come up again. So, and at first, when I started reading and diving into this, and when I first heard, you know, I think it was Crime Junkies is the first time I've ever heard this case. And when I started diving in, you know, everybody was kind of like, didn't really touch on where maybe they thought she was going. I, at first, this is my personal opinion, thought that maybe she was going to her aunt's house. So she originally had spent the night on Friday, February 11th, there, because schools were closed. So her aunt actually lives in the same neighborhood as Aisha, and Aisha's grandmother lives across the street. So those were the two places that I was like, well, maybe Aisha went there, or she was trying to get there. That's why she left. Like, maybe she was really upset. She was close to her aunt. She was close to her grandma. Wanted to go to their house. But upon researching more and digging into it more, I found out that they all lived in the same neighborhood. And I can't remember if Crime Junkies reported that in their episode or not. It's been a long time since I listened to it. But I just kind of wanted to put that out there in case anybody maybe thought the same thing that I was thinking, that she was going to a family member's house. So now I want to talk about the two witnesses who next report seeing Aisha. And that's going to be Roy Blanton Sr. and his son, Roy Jr. They're driving their truck for Porter's Transport, Inc. And they are heading north on Highway 18 around 4:30. So this is about 15 minutes later when they're going to spot someone, again, walking south on Highway 18, and concerned that this person is going to potentially get hit by a passing vehicle or another truck. They're going to put out a warning to other truckers who happen to be on the road. They're going to use their CB radio and, you know, something along the lines of, watch out, there's somebody walking alongside the highway. So we know that Jeff spotted Aisha about 4:15. We know that he makes a U-turn, tries to talk to her. She veers off into the woods. So now she's back on the highway. So is she dodging people, trying not to be spotted? Possibly. But now we know that she's back on the highway. So now this point, she's only a mile away from her house. And now she's heading towards the town of Shelby. Now, if you remember, the house that Aisha grew up in her family home, it's actually on the outskirts of Shelby. And she's heading into Shelby. So Roy Sr. would tell investigators that it was a small figure wearing light-colored clothing. Think back, Aisha's wearing either acid-wash jeans or white jeans, and she's wearing a white nightgown. And she's wearing a light-colored jacket. So he sees this small person wearing these light colored clothing, and he told them that he thought it may possibly have been a woman, but he couldn't tell for sure since him and his son were actually headed in the opposite direction and only saw her briefly in passing. But they did say that the weather conditions were terrible that night. It was cold, it was raining. Remember that storm earlier? So it was just, it's February, it's North Carolina, it's Charlotte, that's up near the mountains, it's cold. And they notice that she's not wearing a coat, she's not wearing a hat, no scarf, no gloves, nothing. Now, I've lived in North Carolina. I lived in Eastern North Carolina. I lived near the beaches. It did not get that cold, but it did snow. So it gets cold. It snowed in like March, I think. But it gets cold there, okay? And like a year or so after I moved from North Carolina, it got a lot of snow. So, I digress. Makes my point. It gets cold. They notice this small figure. They don't know if it's a child. They don't know if it's a woman, but it's a small figure, light-colored clothing, walking alongside of the road. Again, just remember that. No spoilers. I have to just keep telling myself, no spoilers, okay? So, I lost some spot briefly. Now I'm back. Okay. So it makes sense that they notice that this small figure's walking along the highway and they're not wearing a coat. They're not wearing a hat. You know, they're not dressed to be out in the elements. Now there is another report, of a driver also seeing Aisha, but this driver, again, like Roy and his son, they don't stop to see if she's okay. So we know that the only person who has confirmed contact with Aisha is Jeff. And the FBI has stated that they believe Jeff and these other witnesses are credible. And they believe that the sightings that they had reported are credible sightings. And that they do believe these drivers did see Aisha that night, especially Roy and his son. The light-colored clothing, the small figure, I'm tracking. That seems like that could be Aisha. So one witness does state that they pulled over to see if she was okay. Now, I don't know if this is an additional witness. I read a lot of source material on this, and I'm not sure if this is Jeff's statement saying that he spoke to her and she ran off into the woods, or if this is an additional witness saying that they spoke to her and again, she ran off into the woods. Some of the source material had referred to them as the witness or a guy. It was very vague in some of them. But in some sources, it was more specific. I couldn't rule it out, but I couldn't rule it in. So I just wanted to mention it in case this was an additional witness. So this happens around 4:30 to 4:45 in the morning. Now, 5:45 in the morning, that happens from 3:30 to 3:45 to about 4:30 in the morning. So an hour and a half later at 5:45 in the morning, Aquila's alarm is going to go off and she's going to wake up for the day. And she wakes up about 45 minutes before her children so that she can kind of start her day, and she draws a bath for the kids, getting them, you know, getting the things that they need to get their morning started. So at this point, Aquila is not aware that Aisha is missing. She is not going to realize that Aisha is missing until 6:30 when she goes into her kids' bedrooms to wake them up. So at this point, Aisha has been gone a good 3 hours. So she finds O'Brien in his bed, but Aisha is nowhere to be found. She immediately searches the house. She said that she checked every closet. She checked every room. She checked under beds. She checked bathrooms. She checked everywhere. So she can't find her. She's even checking the cars to see if maybe Aisha was in a car. So Harold suggests, you know, because she woke him up in a panic, I don't blame her. Harold says, well, maybe Aisha's across the street at his mother's house, which was Aisha's grandmother's house. So he's like, hey, call over there, see if Aisha is over there. So Aquila does. She calls over there and her sister-in-law answers the phone. And she tells her that Aisha's not there. And Aquila said that this is when she went into full-blown panic mode. And she actually heard a car start out front at this very moment. Like, holy crap, I can't imagine. So she runs outside barefoot, 6:30 in the morning, and she's demanding to speak to this driver and see what's in his car because she is checking for her baby girl. I don't blame her. I don't blame her at all. So she can't find her. Aisha's not in that car. So she tells Harold to call the cops. So this is 6:39 in the morning. So 9 minutes have passed. Harold is going to dial 911. The call is going to last 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And during that call, Harold's going to tell the 911 dispatcher that they went to wake Aisha up for school and they noticed that she was not in her bed. He does say to the operator that her backpack and purse are missing, which leads me to believe that they were kept in a very specific spot that was very easy, like visible and easily able to be noticed that something was missing. So probably like a hook or a very specific spot in their room. They're missing. He also tells them that O'Brien, who shared the room with Aisha, did not hear her leave the room the night before. So I am going to tell you that I am paraphrasing the 911 call. This is not verbatim. I'm pretty sure that if I dug hard enough, I could have found the file. I'm not a huge fan of listening to 911 calls because they're heartbreaking and sometimes they're hard to hear and they're hard to listen to. And I didn't want to put that in there, but I did want to kind of tell you guys what was said, like roughly during this call. So this call has been, paraphrased. So we know that the call lasted about 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And we know that cops show up to the Degree home roughly around 6:40 in the morning. So I'm assuming that Harold was still on the phone with 911 when the first officer arrived on scene, which is like a minute. So that's like super crazy fast, which holy cow, y'all, like that is like the fastest response time that I've like ever heard of. But this makes me think that they still had like an officer on scene from the accident earlier in the evening. And depending on how bad that accident was, cleanup wise, they may have posted an officer there. I'm not sure, but we know that an officer does arrive and that the phone call to 911 lasts 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And we know that at 6:43 a.m., so right about when Harold would be getting off the phone with 911, the sheriff of Cleveland County is going to show up and more officers are going to start to arrive at the Degree home. And once the police arrive, they are going to research the home just to make sure that Aquila and Harold did not miss her somehow. And they search the home. They're going to look for any signs of forced entry or any indication of where Aisha could have gone. Like, they're looking for a ransom note. They're looking for a note that says, "Mom, Dad, I ran away." You know, they're trying to figure out if there's any clues left behind. So Aquila is going to mention to the police when they get there that Aisha was upset over the game that she had lost. And I know that I have said this in a previous episode, but this is a super good example of telling the police whatever it is that you think that they need to know, no matter like how inconsequential that, you know, somebody may tell you or you may think it is. You never know what is going to be helpful. It doesn't hurt to tell them and let them do their own digging to see if they can turn up something that you don't know. So just wanted to say that. So the cops realized that the doors to the family home were locked, and Harold and Aquila actually tell them that Aisha kept her house key in her backpack. So it is quite possible that when Aisha left that morning, that she could have locked the doors behind her as she was leaving. Now, at this time, they're going to start bringing in some canine units, and they're going to get brought in to a search with trying to find Aisha, pick up her scent. But unfortunately, those dogs were unable to pick up Aisha's scent to try and figure out where she was. But we've seen this in the Brandon Swanson case. Water can wash away scent. And if it was raining the night before, raining while she left, it's going to wash away her scent. They're not going to be able to figure out, you know, where she went. So responding officers at the Degree House are going to be given copies of pictures of Aisha. And they're going to head out with the canine units, and they're going to walk around. They're going to canvass the neighborhood. They're going to talk to passersbys. They're going to talk to neighbors. They're going to talk to anybody and everybody that they lay eyes on. Have you seen this little girl? So now it's roughly 7 a.m. and Aquila is going to start running up and down the neighborhood streets. She's going to be looking for Aisha. She's going to be yelling her name. She is just going to be freaking out like any good mother would, okay? So 5 or 6 media outlets are actually going to start arriving, and reporters from various newspapers around the city of Shelby are going to start arriving. And during the 7 a.m. news segment, Aquila ends up all over the news, and she is getting her story out there. And during this time, neighbors are going to start, you know, hearing the commotion. They're going to be woken up by Aquila screaming and yelling. So they're going to come outside, and they're going to, you know, try and figure out what's going on, and they end up canceling plans. Family members are coming together. The pastor from their church is going to come over, and everybody is going to try and organize the best way that they can to try and figure out how they can help find Aisha. And since Aquila had made it on that 7 a.m. news segment, that's actually going to prompt some of those truckers who saw her the night before to come forward and tell the police of what they saw. So volunteers from the local fire department and some rescue squads around the county, they're all going to start showing up to the Degree House, and they're going to fan out from there. That's their starting point. And they are going to start searching. They're going to start checking the area. They're going to be on foot. Teams from the local sheriff's office, Shelby Rescue, the Upper Cleveland County Police Department, Bowling Springs Police Department. They're going to bring out their canine units, the Sauzer, the Falston, Oak Grove, and Waco Police and Fire Departments are all going to come, and they're going to start assisting in the search. And in addition to all of these other departments and rescue squadrons coming out, the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation, which is the SBI, which is how I will refer to them from this point forward because that is a mouthful, is going to tape off the porch to the family home. And they're going to start interviews. And they're going to interview family members. They're going to interview the convenience store clerks along Highway 18. They're going to interview everybody and anybody, neighbors, you name it. Everybody is being interviewed. Now, there were a couple convenience stores along Highway 18. Like I said, those clerks that were working that night were interviewed to see if maybe they had seen anything suspicious the night she went missing, but it doesn't seem like anything came of those interviews. Staff at the Falston Elementary School where Aisha went to school was interviewed. Aisha's friends were interviewed. You know, anybody that had any contact with Aisha the week prior to her disappearance was interviewed. And on the morning of Tuesday, February 15th, police actually ran a checkpoint along Highway 18 around the area where the drivers had last saw the girl. And they unfortunately could not find any clues or any leads that would kind of point them in the direction on where Aisha possibly went. And detectives and agents from the SBI, as well as the FBI, sorry, y'all, they're going to begin collecting hair samples from Aisha's things, and they're going to start collecting dental records. And we all know what those dental records are going to eventually be used for, and that is heartbreaking. Now, the owners of Turner Upholstery are going to be asked by searchers on horseback to check their barn and their three outbuildings. Now, Turner Upholstery is off of Highway 18. And Debbie, the owner, is going to find a pencil, some candy wrappers, a yellow hair bow, and a wallet photo of a young girl. These items were all found in a doorway of an old tool shed on her property. And when these items were found, the Turner family failed to immediately inform the police, and they would ultimately wait until February 17th to inform the police of what they found. Later that afternoon on the 17th, a spotter plane is going to be using infrared and heat sensors, and they're going to be flying around the area of Turner Upholstery looking for any clues, any hotspots, or anything that kind of that could investigators could use to kind of like point them in the direction of maybe where Aisha was or anything that could be Aisha. And that's going to be unsuccessful. Now, since these items were found in the tool shed, ground searches are now going to focus on the area that these items were found. And it is eventually going to be confirmed that that pencil is Aisha's, that yellow hair bow is Aisha's. We don't know if the candy wrappers were something that Aisha ate, and we don't know who that photo is. So it's not Aisha. That is all I know, is that it's not Aisha. So I don't know if somebody was in that tool shed and, or like living in that old tool shed and had this picture of another little girl. I don't know. But let's keep going. So between the 16th and the 18th, the police are now going to focus on a 25 square mile radius around where Aisha was last seen by those witnesses. And during this 3-day span, Jeff Roop, the one that we know had confirmed contact with Aisha, is going to be given a polygraph. And from what I've read, he passed and nothing came of it. And after police were finally given those items that were found by the Turners, they're going to ask the DeGree family, you know, do you know who whose these are? Like, is this Aisha's? And like I said earlier, you know, they confirm the pencil, the hair bow, that's Aisha's, but they don't know who the little girl in the photo was, which is kind of, it's kind of strange and a little bit concerning to me. Now, a week after Aisha disappeared and after a collective 9,000 search hours, the search for Aisha was suspended indefinitely. I searched, and I was unable to find out why they decided to stop the search for her. What I was able to figure out and find out is that they concentrated really hard on a 2 to 3 mile radius around Turner Upholstery, because this is the last known spot where they have physical hard evidence to prove that is where Aisha's last known whereabouts were. However, we don't know if it was actually Aisha there. We just know her things were there. That's just me. So during this week-long search, flyers and missing person posters, they're all going to be put up around town. And this is going to garner around 300 leads to come into the sheriff's department. Those leads ranged from potential sightings of Aisha to suggestions to look at an abandoned house in the area, some abandoned wells in the area, anywhere that Aisha may have, quote, ended up. I was unable, unfortunately, to find anything that would suggest what came of those results. So I'm assuming that they did not garner any good leads, like any solid leads. So it's just something that I wanted to know. Now, they are actually going to hold a press conference And it would be during this press conference that the sheriff would say, quote, "We never really had that good first substantial lead," end quote. And he's going to urge the media to keep her story alive and said he was going to, quote, long range, end quote, search for Aisha. So if he's going this long range on the search for Aisha, why was it suspended? I really just wish I had the answer to that. Like, that was the first thing that popped in my head when I was researching this. Like, if you're going long range, are you going long range solo? Do you have the full resources of the sheriff's department behind you? Like, how? I don't know. I'm just hung up and I'm flabbergasted on why the search was suspended. Why after just 1 week? It doesn't make sense to me. So Aisha is going to end up at this point on the SBI's missing children's database. And they stated, in addition to the missing, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, they stated that she does not meet the typical markers for a runaway. Now, those typical markers are children at least 12 years of age experiencing physical or sexual abuse, family conflict, substance abuse, child sex trafficking, online enticement, they want to go be with a friend, and there were a various list of others, and I'm actually going to include the link on the page to the NCMEC, so if you're interested in learning, especially if you have kiddos who are approaching that 12-year-old mark, it's a good resource just to have tucked into your back pocket and, you know, be able to use at a later date and time should you ever need it. I hope that you don't ever need it, but it's good to know. It's good to have in your toolbox. So with this in mind, and with everything that the SBI has said, the FBI and the NCMEC, I think it's safe to say that Aisha probably didn't run away. And I'm not the only person who does not believe that Aisha did not run away. Her family members and the police also don't believe that she ran away. But with the investigation suspended, it was going to be hard to try and get those answers. So the family took matters into their own hands, and they're going to go on the Montel Williams show, which for some younger listeners, that was a talk show host with Montel Williams, early 2000s. Think like Steve Harvey's talk show host, Ellen DeGeneres. Those are some talk show hosts that are still on today that were on back then. I don't think the Steve Harvey show was on back then, but Montel Williams was a show. Same era that like Maury was on, but way less trashy than Maury. So don't even think that I'm comparing Maury to Montel Williams, because that is not the case. Okay. So anyway, so they're going to go on the Montel Williams show to talk about her case and make sure that no one forgets about her and that people keep looking. America's Most Wanted is going to do a show, or not a show, but an episode on her. Oprah Winfrey is going to do an episode on her. And these shows and episodes are going to bring in some tips. However, none of those tips are going to be substantial, and none of them are going to garner any good leads for them to try and find Aisha. Now, there is going to be a lead that turns up in Aisha's case, but it's not going to come until a year and a half later, on August 3rd, 2001. Terry Fleming was a construction worker who was working on digging an access road for a new home up in Burke County, North Carolina. Now, Burke County is 26 miles north of Shelby. And while digging, he's going to uncover a bag that he said, quote, looked strange. Inside the black trash bag, he's going to find Aisha's backpack. And we know that it was hers because inside that backpack was her name and her telephone number written on a piece of paper inside the black backpack. Now, you're probably thinking, how did this paper not disintegrate a year and a half out in the elements? That's because her backpack was actually wrapped inside and double wrapped inside plastic, and it was buried underground, so protected from the elements from that plastic. Now, can you guess where this new access road is 50 yards off of? If you said Highway 18, you would be correct. And that was a little snap. I don't know if that came through on the microphone or not. Now, this Highway 18 is going to be the same Highway 18 that Aisha was last seen walking along just 17 months ago. And in addition to the piece of paper with her name and number on it, police are going to find a new Kids on the Block t-shirt, which they do release a photo of, and I will post that on Instagram. And they're also going to see a Dr. Seuss book in the backpack as well. Now, the book actually belonged to Falston Elementary, and it was checked out of the library there. And sources are kind of split on whether or not they believe that everything inside the backpack belonged to Aisha. Now, we do know that the book came from elementary school, so technically it's not hers, which I can see why some sources are like, oh, well, it didn't belong to her, but it was in potentially her possession at the time of her disappearance. So in theory, it's Aisha's book. It's in her possession at the time. Now, the t-shirt has been reported that it was hers and not hers. So I don't know. But if you remember when I said earlier about all the other clothes, like the long sleeve shirt and the vest, the shirt with the purple lettering and the black shoes, none of that is found. None of that is ever found. Just this book and just this new Kids on the Block shirt. The rest of the stuff, never found. Tweety Bird bag, never found. Just want to throw that out there. So, on August 13th, 2001, Sheriff Crawford is said that this new evidence had led him to believe that Aisha was abducted while leaving her house. I just want you to remember that when we talk about theories, because I don't want to give you any spoiler alerts, but just remember that. So the backpack and the trash bag that the backpack was found in are sent to an FBI lab in Quantico, and they're sent for forensic testing. The results of that testing has never been made public. I'm hoping that one day it will be. It's not yet, but one day it will. I have Google alerts set for every single case that I have ever covered so far. I have a Google alert for. So, Boy in the Box, I get constant updates about that. You know, Lauren Spear, Brandon Swanson, Nikki McCowan, like, just to name a few, the Yuba County Five. I have alerts set for any time any potential new evidence turns up or any test results are released. So if they ever release these test results, I will know. When I know, you guys will know. Pinky promise, okay? Are we all pinkies up? Pinky promise? Okay, moving on. So, in October, so just a couple months later of 2001, there are going to be more bags that are going to turn up that are actually similar to the same bag that Aisha's backpack was in. And they're going to do some type of testing and they're going to confirm that it's the same type of bag. Those bags, again, are sent off for testing, but again, results not made public yet. So now we're going to fast forward to 2004. And this is when the next tip is going to come in. that doesn't happen until November 9th. And it's actually going to come from a prison inmate who tells police that Aisha was killed and he knew where she was buried. So police get a search warrant and they search at the corner of Shelby and Rube Spangler Road near Lawndale, North Carolina, which is actually northwest of her home in Shelby, or just on the outskirts of Shelby, I should say. And south of where her backpack was found. I do have a map. I will post that on Instagram because that is like northwest, but south and north and I don't know. It's confusing. Hard to follow in your head if you're like me and your brain's a strange place. So there will be a photo to help you guys look. So they go there and during the search, they find bones. So police were like, oh, wow, okay. Maybe this guy's telling the truth. So they collect the bones and they send them off. And in addition to those bones, they also find a pair of men's khaki pants. And where all this stuff is found, it's only 6 miles away from Aisha's home. So they're like, okay, maybe this is Aisha. It's not. It was animal bones that they found. I don't know what animal. It doesn't specify. I don't know how you mistake animal bones for human bones. A human skull is very different than, say, a dog skull or a deer skull. Spinal bones are different. Arm bones don't look the same as leg bones, so I don't know. But I am sure that they were doing their due diligence, and they probably realized, okay, these are not Aisha. But you know what? They may have evidence that could point us to where Aisha is, especially those pants. So I just kind of wanted to say that. Now, unfortunately, from about 2004 to 2015, I was unable to find much movement. There was a couple of reports, but it was very much the same. Things were just reiterated. But in 2015, the FBI is going to announce that agents from the FBI, the SBI, and the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office are going to team up once again, and they're going to re-examine this case. They're going to re-interview all the witnesses. They're going to follow up on leads. They are basically going to overhaul this investigation. They're going to start from the beginning and they're going to tick through and they're going to try and see, okay, was something potentially missed or was something not followed up on correctly? So they end up the FBI offers up a $25,000 reward for any information that leads them to an arrest and a prosecution. Okay, so you can't just go willy-nilly being like, I know where Aisha is. Let me get that $25,000. Wrong, sir, ma'am. It needs to be credible, okay? So the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children would actually create a new age progression photo of what Aisha may potentially have looked like in 2015. And again, it will be on Instagram so you guys can look at it. And a year later, in May of 2016, the FBI and the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office announced that due to the reinvestigation into Aisha's case, they have actually received some information that someone matching Aisha's description was last seen getting into a dark-colored car along Highway 18 near where it is believed that Aisha was last seen. And this car is believed to be an early 1970s Lincoln Mark IV or a Ford Thunderbird. Like I said, it is a dark green car and it has rust around the wheel wells. Again, photo will be on Instagram for you guys to look at. And while investigators don't know for sure if this car was involved in Aisha's disappearance, they do say that it is a vehicle of interest and that they would like to speak to the owner of the vehicle or maybe speak to a friend of the owner of that vehicle who knows something or a lover of the person who owned that car because maybe they know something because pillow talk and, you know, you can't keep a secret between two people. Y'all ever seen Pretty Little Liars? Two of us can keep a secret if one of us is dead. Which means that somebody knows something. Okay? Somebody knows something. Somebody needs to start talking. Okay? So, a spokesperson for the FBI said, quote, "They believe they may have seen someone matching Aisha's description get into a distinctive vehicle the morning she was seen walking on Highway 18 in the Shelby area," end quote. Now, the FBI is going to bring the Child Abduction Rapid Deployment Team, which is called their CARD team, and I will be referring to them as CARD from here on out, in September of 2017, so 17 years later, to assist in Aisha's case. Now, if you're not familiar with CARD, like I was not up until now, and you immediately thought, well, nice of you to show up, you know, better late than ever, I guess. Well, CARD didn't actually exist back in 2000, so they couldn't have deployed them. So that makes sense. It was created in 2006, and the CARD team actually consists of FBI personnel from around the country who are considered to be subject matter experts, or shorthand SME. I really wanted to just throw the word SME in there because I think it's a cool word. Anyway, so there can considered subject matter experts in child abduction cases, and they actually serve as a resource to both local and state law enforcement agencies. So as somebody who's getting their master's in forensic psychology, if anybody from the CARD team is listening, can I have a job? Okay, thank you, bye. So the CARD team is going to end up tearing apart Aisha's case. And I mean, they tore it up. They dug through everything. I mean, they reinvestigated the reinvestigation of the original investigation. Like, they were not playing when it came. They wanted to make sure that they could eliminate suspects, and they wanted to narrow down. Sorry, y'all. I'm bouncing the wire off the mic. They wanted to narrow down, you know, possibly where they needed to focus their investigation on. So John Strong is the supervisory special agent on the CART team. And he said, quote, "We strongly believe that someone has information that can lead us to Aisha." John, sir, I agree with you. Someone knows something, and they're just not speaking up. And we've seen something similar before. If you guys listen to the Nikki McCowan case, her sister, I believe, said that she thinks somebody who had some pillow talk with the person of interest and the suspect in her sister's disappearance, you know, somebody said something to someone else, that someone else said something, whispered down the lane, somebody knows something. And all it takes is that one person to just speak up and just be like, you know what? This isn't my secret to keep. Why am I keeping it? Why? Who are you protecting? Why are you protecting them is the better case. I mean, who is the ultimate question, but like, why is like this second most important question on who and why are you protecting this person and who are they? Please tell me. I would love to know. Just like Aisha's parents would love to know. One, where their baby girl is. And two, why some jack wagon decided to take their baby girl. So, in 2018, 18 years. Almost 17, because it was early 2018. So it was like 17 years after Aisha went missing. Investigators are going to release photos, which will be on Instagram, of both the shirt and the book. So they find the shirt and the Dr. Seuss book in August of 2001, right? So 17 months after she disappeared, they find the book and they find the shirt. But they wait 17 years to release photos. That I have questions on. Why didn't, when they reinvestigated back in 2015, why didn't they release it then? When the car team came to investigate in 2017, why didn't they release those photos then? Those photos could have jogged someone's memory, which is why they released them in 2018, was hopes to jog someone's memory. I don't understand why they waited that long. I don't know. So they released the photos, and unfortunately, doesn't lead us to any new leads. Now, the very last possible lead that I want to discuss is from 2020, actually, when the panini was going on. Now, Marcus Mellon, who is a soggy piece of nasty, moldy lettuce, he's a convicted, how can I put this very nicely for, he's convicted of child sex crimes. There's no other way to get around it. He sucks as a human being, and I hope that he stubs his pinky toe every single day, multiple times a day, for the rest of eternity. Like, even after he dies, I hope he continues to stub his pinky toe. Both pinky toes, in fact. And I hope that they break eventually and they're just dangling like gnarled little, I don't even know. Okay, let's focus. So he's going to tell the Star News, he's going to call them, or he's going to write a letter to them, because he's in jail and he can't just call them. He's going to write them a letter and he's going to say, hey, I know where Aisha is and I know how she died. So when he wrote the letter, he's going to say that someone he knew killed her and he knew where this person buried her body. Awesome. Cool. You spoke up. You know where she is. Awesome. Let's talk. However, he only wants to talk to the FBI. He will only speak to them. Now, this was like shortly before the panini shut the world down. So that poses an obstacle. They can't get in to talk to him. So Cleveland County Sheriff Alan Norman, so now there's a new sheriff in town, he's going to follow up with Marcus. Awesome. He's able to get there. He's local. Perfect. He's going to find out that Marcus was told this information by, let's say, Bob. Bob was told this information by Jim. Jim was told this information by Steve. Steve committed the crime, right? So Steve told Jim, who told Bob, who told Marcus. So really, Marcus doesn't have any information. It ends up being that Marcus has zero useful information. So now let's talk theories surrounding her case. So the first theory that I want to talk about is what I'm going to call the sleepwalking theory. And I don't believe that this is what happened. Now, this theory says that she was sleepwalking the night that she left and possibly fell into a pool and drowned. However, there are some large holes in this theory. From everything I read, she did not suffer from a sleepwalking disorder. Her parents have never once mentioned that she had sleepwalked in the past. Two, there is no way that while she was sleeping, she was able to pack a bag. Well, I mean, she could have. She totally could have, because my friend sleepwalks and she would take her clothes off and fold them. So it's possible. She could have packed a bag, but she's nine. I don't think so. And then got out of the house quietly and locked the door quietly enough that no one heard her. I have had sleepovers when I was younger with said sleepwalking friend. She was loud. I knew immediately when she was sleepwalking. So, I don't know. Now, last hole in that theory is the falling into the pool part. If she did fall into someone's pool, why did no one report it? Why? So, I don't know. I don't think that one goes. The second theory is that she was potentially murdered by a family member. Now, Aquila has stated that she does not believe that her son or her husband could be capable of hurting her daughter. And the cops have also ruled out every single member of the degree immediate family, Harold, Aquila, O'Brien, all three of them were ruled out very quickly in the investigation. So not much to support that this theory that this is what happened. And everything that I've read, Aisha lived a very happy life and there were no issues on the home front. And it's 2023, and from my understanding, Aquila and Harold are still married. So you're not still married 23 years after your daughter disappears if you're unhappy. So I don't think that's the case. The third theory is that she was abducted from home. And while this is very rare, it is not impossible. And I mean, look at Elizabeth Smart. She was abducted out of her home while her sister was in the same room with her by someone that she did not know. So it's possible. And I think this is what happened to Aisha. And from what I've seen, investigators also seem to think that this is what happened to Aisha. Now, here is my twist. Here is my thoughts and my personal theory, kind of like mixed in with like the theory that she was abducted. So I think somehow Aisha came into contact with someone who coaxed her to leave the home that night. They groom her, they talk to her, they convince her to leave her home. I don't know how, I don't know when, and I don't know why, but they say, leave your house, meet me somewhere along Highway 18. And I think that this is why when she was spotted by all of those witnesses that it seemed like she knew where she was going. I think that, you know, she had come into contact with somebody who had face-to-face contact with her. So could this be, you know, another family member, a family friend? Not in the immediate family. It's possible. Yes, it is very, very possible that this is what happened because there's no sign of forced entry. So if this person had easy access to Aisha, they could have easily convinced her to leave that night and said, hey, listen, if anybody sees you, don't talk to them. Hide. Meet me here. I'll pick you up. Maybe that's why, you know, she got into that car because this person was coming to pick her up. Now, I was unable to find any information that states whether or not Harold and Aquila knew anybody who drove a Lincoln Mark IV or a Thunderbird that was a dark green color. There isn't much information regarding that, but that doesn't mean that they didn't steal a car, borrow a car, you know, because if they were close to the family and they used their own personal vehicle and they were spotted, it could have been connected to them. Now, I do want to point out holes in my theory. Even though this is my theory, I don't want to come off as biased whatsoever. So the first hole is that, like I said, you know, maybe somebody was in contact with Aisha. Now, early 2000s, there was AIM and, you know, chat rooms with checkers and stuff. But Aisha doesn't have access to a computer. So this limits the possibility that she was coaxed by a stranger and increases the possibility that she was coaxed by someone she knew, which is usually what happens. Kids are normally kidnapped by someone that they know, someone that they trust. Unfortunately, that is what I think happened here. Now, because she doesn't have a computer in her house, she does not have access, this is going to limit the chances of connecting with someone online, like I said. Now, the person who potentially lured her out of the home had to have physical contact with her, right? So they had to talk to her face to face. So is this face to face meeting occurring under the parents' noses and they don't realize that something nefarious and something suspicious is happening because they trust this person? And this is what I think happened, is that it is somebody close to them, and Harold and Aquila didn't realize what was happening because this person is trusted. And like I said earlier, Aquila and the police don't think that either O'Brien or Harold had anything to do with it. But did a family friend or another family? I remember, I don't know. I was unable to find any information, even kind of indicating that any of that was checked out. So I don't know. But I did want to point it out, even though it is my theory, I want to be as open and transparent with you guys as possible. Now, the fourth theory. Now, this is the most common theory, is that Aisha ran away. But she doesn't meet any of those markers. She has a good home. From what we know, she's not being physically abused. She's not being sexually abused. It doesn't seem like she's running away to meet a friend. No other friends have said, "Oh, we plan this," you know. So cops don't think this is what happened. Her family members don't think this is what happened. So there, that leaves us with our final theory. And this one is actually, I don't know. This one's interesting. I could see people going either way on this one. I'm sorry if you heard that big like groan and thump. That was my lab just dropping all of his weight very ungracefully onto the floor. So, this final theory, and it actually has to do with a book that her class was reading, and the book was called The Whipping Boy, and it was by Sid Fletchman. And in the book, it follows the adventures of two characters that run away from home, which could romanticize the idea to young children, but if Aisha was chasing this fantasy, why would she leave in the middle of the night, let alone on a stormy night? What? I don't know. But the characters in the book, from what I read, they end up coming back. So if that was like Aisha's plan, like why didn't she come back? I don't know. I don't know if I buy that, but it was mentioned in like one or two of the sources. So now there is, from everything that I've seen, there are no suspects whatsoever in this case. There was, however, a possible person of interest. I don't know. So this person is Donald Preston Ferguson, and he is another trash bag, garbage, moldy lettuce, soggy, wet, moldy noodle, I don't know, of a human being, okay? He is going to be charged in 2014 of the 1990 murder of 7-year-old Shalonda Poole. And police are actually going to attempt to link Ferguson to Aisha's case because of the geographical location and the victimology in both cases. However, they were unable to successfully link him to Aisha's case, so there's still a possibility that they are connected, but it doesn't seem likely. And Aquila has said that she does not believe that Aisha's dead. She said, quote, because she would have felt it. And sadly, that concludes our episode on the disappearance of Aisha DeGree. But I do ask that if you were, I'm really sorry, that is my dog. If you were in the Shelby area of North Carolina during the early morning hours of February 14th, 2000, and you saw a child fitting Aisha's description of an African American female with black hair that was typically styled in pigtails with brown eyes, standing 4 foot 6 inches tall, that's 137 centimeters, and weighing 60 pounds, which is 27 kilograms, most likely wearing a white t-shirt, white jeans, or acid wash jeans, and white sneakers, you're encouraged to call the sheriff's office at the FBI at 704-672-6100, or you can call the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office at 704-484-4822. Again, the FBI is offering a $25,000 reward, and the community is offering an additional $20,000, totaling $45,000 for any information leading to the arrest and conviction of the individual or individuals responsible for Aisha's disappearance. You can also leave an anonymous tip on the FBI tip line at 1-800-CALL-FBI.